Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken down here in Missouri, but I am reading from the Friday, May 10th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And now we'll begin with our first piece from the front page top of the fold. Millions of cicadas about to emerge in tri-states. It is nearly time once again for the tri-state area to experience one of nature's most dramatic animal phenomena, as millions of periodical cicadas tunnel upward through the soil where they have spent the past 17 years and reach the surface. In the next few weeks, those cicadas are expected to emerge in one nymph form, then escape the exoskeletons that have protected them since 2007 while they fed on root tissue of local trees. This brood of periodical cicadas will then take to the sky. The males will trill to females at high decibels, creating a literally historic level of noise. The cicadas will then reproduce and die. According to area experts, the event will make a substantial and mostly beneficial impact on tri-state area ecosystems. According to U.S. Forest Service maps, the local brood 13 cicadas were seen across east central Iowa, southern Wisconsin, and northern Illinois during their 2007 emergence, including in Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, and Jackson counties in Iowa, Joe Davies County, Illinois, and Grant County, Wisconsin. No emergence was shown on the agency's maps for Lafayette County, Wisconsin, but all its surrounding counties showed activity. According to Dubuque County Conservation Director Brian Preston, the tri-state area has some of the region's best preserved woodlands, especially in public lands and those private lands held in conservation easements of some kind. Because of that, he said this emergence should be nearly as robust as the last. Along the Mississippi River bluffs, those steep slopes and wooded terrain are likely to be a hotbed for this emergence, he said. Ryan Hassel, associate professor of biology at University of Wisconsin-Platteville, said the noise that Brood 13 makes is going to be hard to ignore for area residents and visitors, even if they do not see them otherwise. They are these very obvious presences in our lives for the summer, he said. But most people, except maybe finding their molts, won't likely actually see the living cicadas that much because they're so high up in the air. That noise probably will not be heard in the area for about a month yet. Right now, according to cicadas.wisconsin.edu, created for this emergence by the University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab, the cicadas are still in their nymph stage, tunneling upward a few inches below the surface, still developing the wings and other organs needed to reproduce in coming months. Early signs of cicadas include particularly active mole tunning, as the mammals snack on nymphs they find in the dirt. Ground temperatures need to be consistently at least 64 degrees before the nymphs emerge, and are expected to rise from the ground first in Jackson and Joe Davies counties in this area. According to the state data, 4-inch soil temperatures were 63 in Jackson County as of Wednesday. Then many of the nymphs will create chimneys of soil above the ground's surface so their tunnels do not fill with rainwater. A few days later, the cicadas will crawl out and climb a nearby vertical surface, a tree, tall grass, house siding, etc. People can be on the lookout for their exoskeletons, said Dubuque County conservation naturalist Jason Denlinger. Still, people will not hear the cicada's signature trill just yet. The cicadas first need to climb into treetops as they are not yet ready to fly and or reproduce. Cicadas are vulnerable to predation at these early stages and really throughout their above-ground life cycle. That, according to Hassel, is periodical cicadas' greatest contribution to their ecosystems. Ecologically, one thing that is important is that they provide an excellent supply of food for the animals that predate them, he said. But because periodical cicada broods are so numerous, up to 1.5 million per acre, according to the citizen science website Cicada Safari, they can exceed predators' feeding capacity and still reproduce. Just over a week after their emergence, the male cicadas begin their very loud chorus in an attempt to attract females. Many people think they're screaming with their mouths, said Denninger. It's the males vibrating their timbals, a noise organ, on their abdomens. After cicadas do successfully mate, females use an organ to slit a tree's leaf or bark in which it will lay hundreds of eggs, then die. The eggs will hatch a short time later, dropping to the next generation to bury into the ground and latch onto tree roots for another 17 years. Hassel said that trees a few years old or younger could sustain some damage. Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Service suggests netting young trees to prevent this. But Hassel said that generally, periodical cicadas do no harm to plant life. And while periodical cicadas are so very numerous, Denglinger said that many, even in the tri-state area, have been impacted by development and agricultural practice. While it might seem like who cares, there are billions and billions of them. That's what we thought about the passenger pigeon, he said. If they are only able to distribute every 17 years, and then there is less food source around when it is time to emerge, we could lose them. So plant more trees. Our next front page piece. Republican hopefuls for Iowa House discuss experience library materials. At the Dubuque League of Women Voters Republican recently primary candidate forum, candidates for Dubuque's Iowa House District 72 shared what they believe sets them apart for the chance to face longtime Democratic incumbent Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhardt. The two Republicans, Jennifer Smith and Rod Warnke, will face off in the June 4 primary election. The two align on many of the topics they were asked about during the forum and lauded Iowa's Republican trifecta's recent income tax cuts. But they shared subtle differences and different views, rather, on the need to remove materials deemed objectionable from the shelves of school and or public libraries and what makes them best able to oust Eisenhardt in the general election. An audience member asked if the candidates supported recent efforts by Iowa Republican lawmakers to require that materials they deemed to be sexually explicit be removed from K-12 schools. Warnke supported the idea and said the state should centralize more control over the issue, although he said standards for what is objectionable was a difficult conundrum. The standard for an objectionable book needs to be uniform, he said. How do you define what is objectionable? Is it objectionable only in the children's section, or is it objectionable everywhere? Hopefully, there would be sections where only adults are allowed to check books out of a public library. Those decisions have to be made at some sort of central level. The state is the best level to make that happen in terms of setting the standard for what is objectionable and what should be banned. Smith agreed with state requirements of school libraries, but said public libraries should be able to control their own materials. If you are not able to read a book in a public square or talk about those things to a child you see on the street, then they should not be in the school library. They need to be age-appropriate and relevant to the educational system and curriculum going on in the school, she said. A public library has every right to have any book that they want. I don't have any issues with any book being available for anybody to read in a public library. Now, maybe there are areas where children should not be allowed, but I am not in favor of banning books at a public library. Both Republicans shared a goal of furthering the state's tax cuts, although they had different ideas about impacts on local governments. Warnke said that cutting taxes is absolutely necessary at both the state and local levels. Iowa remains a high-tax state, he said. The best way to address that situation is to reduce the size of government and thereby reduce the need for taxation. Then reduce taxation. We are not a high-tax state because we provide so many services. We're a high-tax state because we have too much government. The way you're going to force that on local governments is to make them make hard choices because there's not as much money in the till as they want to spend. Smith, though, said that tax cuts need not equal revenue cuts. Eliminating the state income tax will increase the number of businesses that come into a state, she said. I don't know that it's necessarily going to reduce the amount of revenue for local governments because we're going to be getting it from other sources. We're going to increase our tax base by increasing our population, by bringing people in. Smith ran against Eisenhardt in 2022, losing to the incumbent Democrat by fewer than 100 votes. She has also served on various Republican Party boards, including in the State Central Committee. She said that made her the best choice for Republicans ahead of the 2024 general election. I have relationships through a lot of the activities I've been involved with a lot of the legislators currently in office. I know Governor Reynolds, Attorney General Byrd, Lieutenant Governor Adam, Greg, as well as leadership, she said. I can get to work immediately. I don't have to build those relationships. Warnke invited voters to get to know him, as he said he has different views from Smith on topics which may not have been discussed during the forum, not elaborating on those differences further. We're going to differ on the minor points, perhaps, he said. Please do what you can to look at the candidates in a little more detail. We are different people. We do have different views. Eisenhardt declined to comment on the Republican candidates' forum statements as he had not attended the forum to hear them, but said he looked forward to hearing voters' concerns as he campaigns ahead of the general election. Dubuque County Democrats Chairman Matt Robinson said Eisenhardt has a lot of support behind him. We recognize that was a close race last time around, he said, of the 2022 election. Nonetheless, we are committed to ensuring that House District 72 remains in Democrat control, regardless of who is the Republican nominee. We are 100% behind Chuck. There is a clear choice for who is going to work for them in Des Moines. That is Chuck. And our final front page piece is one of our A Life Remembered pieces. This one's titled, Maquoketa Man Had Heart for Humor, Family. If you knew where to look, it was easy to tell when David Tone was getting ready to tell a joke. It might be an off-the-wall quote from British comedy troupe Monty Python or a sarcastic remark aimed at one of his children. Whatever it was, the Maquoketa Man's many moments of humor were always punctuated by his signature smirk. Anytime you saw him smile and his eyes started twinkling before he said something, you knew you were going to be whammied, said his wife, Maxine Max Tone. David died January 26th at age 59. He was born July 6, 1964, in Dubuque, the second of two sons born to Mel and Roseanne Tone. Mel said the family enjoyed traveling, including a memorable camping trip to the Appalachians where a young David got his hand stuck in a vending machine. Max was visiting one of the Tone's neighbors one day when she saw David drive by and thought he was pretty darn cute. We arranged to go roller skating, and my dad drove us to our first date at the roller rink, she recalled. I was 14, and David was 16. Later that year, David's life changed when a doctor detected an increased heartbeat during his sports physical. He was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, a general term for diseases that affect the heart muscle and its ability to pump blood. During his final years of high school, David completed regular treatments in Iowa City. However, his condition continued to worsen, and he soon began experiencing minor heart attacks. I think the hardest time I ever had was when we were driving back from Iowa City, and he said, "Dad, am I going to die?" Mel said. I didn't know what to say. On June 9th, 1983, an 18-year-old David received a heart transplant at Stanford Healthcare in California. After performing a biopsy on his original heart, doctors determined he would have had only about one more month to live without the transplant, according to Max. Heart transplants were still in their early stages then, and many of the medicines David received were experimental. Dave was brave enough to take those chances, Max said. David spent 3 months in California in recovery. The family received regular support from John Deere Dubuque Works, where Mel worked, and from First Congregational United Church of Christ in Dubuque, their parish at the time. Upon returning to Dubuque, David took a part-time job as a delivery driver for Domino's Pizza while Max attended what was then Clark College. The couple wed on October 18, 1986, and welcomed their two children, Alex and Kirsten, in 1988 and 1990, respectively. While Max worked full-time, David was a stay-at-home father. He spent his days caring for Alex and Kirsten, shuttling them to and from activities and serving as the default adult at home in the Tone's Dubuque neighborhood, according to Kirsten. He made our house a place in our neighborhood where all our friends felt welcomed and accepted when they came over to play, she said. David also spent plenty of time volunteering. He was a Boy Scout troop leader and scoutmaster during Alex's years in Boy Scouts, earning his Wood Badge in 2006 for completing the Boy Scouts Leader Training Program. He helped lead Kirsten's Girl Scout troop with Max, taught Sunday school, and led American Red Cross courses in first aid, lifeguarding, and canoeing. In 2000, David, Max, and her children moved from Dubuque to a house they had constructed on an acreage near Andrew, Iowa, owned by David's parents. The three generations lived there together for a decade before moving back to Dubuque, where they continued to live under the same roof. In Max's words, David was an adrenaline junkie, always seeking adventure, despite his doctor's worries from when they saw the bruises he had gotten from completing a high ropes course. He also was a voracious reader, devouring mysteries like the Alex Cross series by James Patterson and the Cat Who series by Lillian Jackson Braun. David also loved woodworking and beer brewing and was a longtime member of Dubuque Area Society of Brewers. He liked to stay busy, Alex said. In 2013, David received his second heart transplant, this time in Iowa City. The veins in the transplanted heart had begun stretching and weakening after 30 years, an exceptionally long time for someone to live with a transplanted heart, Max said. The family moved to Maquoketa in March of 2020 when Max, who had recently graduated from University of Dubuque Theological Seminary, was appointed pastor at Maquoketa United Church of Christ. The next several years proved challenging for the family. As Roseanne died in September of 2020, David was diagnosed with lung disease in 2021, and Max received treatment for cancer in 2022. It was to the point where I couldn't really care for him, so we put him on hospice, and he spent 13 months on hospice, Max said. During his final year, David often lacked the energy to engage in some of his favorite pursuits, such as riding his motorcycle or completing woodworking projects. He had purchased a French bulldog for Max when she was undergoing cancer treatments, and during the summer of 2023, he asked for a dog of his own. The pug puppy, Cupcake, rarely left his side. From the time she entered the Tone's home, and could often be found snuggling at his feet while he watched television on the couch. She really was a source of comfort for him. Now we turn to our Dubuque and Tri-State page, and our first piece we'll have is Police. Dubuque man received shipments of drugs. Police said a postal inspector and a Dubuque Drug Task Force member dressed as a UPS employee helped investigate a shipment of drugs that eventually led to the arrest of a Dubuque man who had nearly 30 pounds of unused THC vape cartridges in his possession. Evan J. Andrews, 29, of 1560 Iowa Street No. 3, was arrested at 2:25 p.m. Wednesday in the area of East 16th and Central Avenue on a warrant charging possession of cocaine with intent to deliver, possession of marijuana with intent to deliver, possession of methamphetamine, possession of Adderall, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Court documents state that authorities began investigating Andrews on March 15th when a security investigator for United Parcel Service, 2550 Kerper Boulevard, contacted police regarding a suspicious package that was being shipped through UPS to an address in Dubuque. The package was being shipped to Joseph Andrews at an address in the 4000 block of Sunlight Ridge. A canine unit alerted officers to the odor of narcotics within the package. Officers obtained a search warrant and located 2.27 pounds of cocaine in the package. Also on March 15th, a U.S. Postal Inspection Task Force officer informed Dubuque police that a parcel had been delivered to Joseph Andrews at the Sunlight Ridge address that day. That postal service package had been sent from the same address in California as the parcel identified at UPS, documents stated. Investigators with the Dubuque Drug Task Force attempted a controlled delivery of the UPS package on March 18th to the residents on Sunlight Ridge. Documents state that a controlled delivery is when law enforcement seizes drugs from a package, then attempts to deliver the package to the addressee. An investigator dressed as a UPS employee attempted to deliver the package, but was told that Andrews did not live at the residence. An occupant of the residence refused to accept the package. The occupant stated that Andrews was a relative and often had packages shipped to the residence, and the occupant would then take them to Andrews at his apartment on Iowa Street. Investigators obtained a search warrant for Andrews' apartment. While searching Andrews' apartment, investigators located 3.11 pounds of marijuana, 12.64 pounds of tetrahydrocannabinol THC wax, 29.82 pounds of unused THC vape cartridges, 1.13 grams of cocaine, 0.7 grams of methamphetamine, MDMA, 25 Adderall pills of 20 milligrams each, 2 digital scales containing field-tested cocaine residue, 4 empty bags containing field-tested cocaine residue, numerous unused gem-style bags, heat seal-type bags containing field-tested cocaine residue, and numerous large vacuum seal bags that had the odor of marijuana emanating from them, documents state. Andrews told police that he did not wish to speak with investigators about any of the drugs that had been found. A warrant for Andrews' arrest was issued April 22nd. Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Luke Bach said charges are pending against an occupant of the residence on Sunlight Ridge. And now we'll journey on over to our opinion page and our Friday Hour View, the quick takes that represent the point of view of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And today we have, well, first a kind of a squirmy face and then two smiley faces. So our first one, sick of noisy trains? we've got a survey for you. Got thoughts about the noise from trains in Dubuque neighborhoods? Now is your chance to weigh in with your opinion. The City of Dubuque is participating in a regional study to assess the feasibility of creating railroad quiet zones in the area. Officials are looking for input on the impacts of train noise in Dubuque and the public's interest in creating a quiet zone. The merger between the Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern Railroads has increased train traffic through downtown Dubuque. By 2027, the number of trains passing through the city is expected to double from 9 trains per day to 18. With that comes an increase in train noise pollution, hence the consideration of creating a quiet zone. Noise can keep folks from sleeping and cause stress-related illnesses and loss of productivity. Homes near busy railways are often devalued. Quiet zones are intended to improve the quality of life for those who live and work near a railroad crossing. A railroad quiet zone is a federal designation for a single crossing or series of crossings where train operators are restricted from sounding their horns or whistles except in emergencies or specific situations outlined by local regulations. Local residents who want to sound off about train noise can fill out a short survey at www.cityofdubuque.org/quietzonesurvey. The survey will be open until 5 p.m. Wednesday, May 15th. To receive a paper copy of the survey, call the Engineering Department 563-589-4270. That was 563-589-4270. Next, we have a smiley. Last week saw Governor Kim Reynolds signing off of HF 2568, a bill championed by the Iowa Bicycle Coalition, AARP Iowa, researchers at the University of Iowa Injury Prevention Research Center, and bike shops and clubs across the state. It extends critical protections to benefit everyone who uses crosswalks, including all forms of pedestrians, cyclists, and people using any other mobility device or personal conveyance. Currently, Iowa law's protections of pedestrians include people on foot, not those using skateboards, wheelchairs, bikes, or other wheeled vehicles. By signing this measure into law, the state provides new protections for cyclists on trails, disabled people using wheelchairs or electric scooters, and parents pushing strollers. Cheers for Iowa's new definition of pedestrian and the legislature making the state's crosswalks and roadways safer for everyone. Our third and final smiley face, a salute to Dubuque City Council member Rick Jones, who was recognized this week for his 50 years of continuous service to the City of Dubuque. Jones's career began as a probationary firefighter and EMT in 1974. He worked his way through the ranks and retired as the department's first EMS supervisor on August 12, 2005, after 31 years. He then ran for an at-large seat on the council and was elected in November 2005. He is serving his fifth term. Some of the major projects that have taken place since Jones has been a council member include the overhaul of the Water and Resource Recovery Center, the construction of the B Branch Creek, and the construction of the Southwest Arterial. Jones has also served on the Dubuque Metropolitan Area Transportation Study Policy Committee, Dubuque Metropolitan Area Solid Waste Agency, Iowa Regional Workforce Investment Board, FEMA Local Emergency Planning Committee, Conference Committee, DRA and the Dubuque Convention and Visitors Bureau Board. He also was a founding member of the Upper Main Street Jazz Band in 1987, bringing decades of swinging music to regional events. The group made its final performance earlier this year. After a half century of experience with city issues, Jones's knowledge is vast and deep. He's thoughtful in his approach, listens to stakeholders, and has helped guide the city through challenging situations. We're grateful for his services. And we have with us today one letter to the editor. War in Gaza needs deeper consideration. Jean Harrington, Echo Hills Drive, Bellevue. On March 16, 2023, 23-year-old Rachel Corey was protesting the demolition of Palestinian homes in Rafah when she was crushed by an Israeli bulldozer. Her death was unique because she was American, not Palestinian. Prior to the Hamas October 7 attack, Israeli forces, IDF, had killed over 6,000 Palestinians, confiscated 247,000 acres of Palestinian land, demolished 50,000 homes, and imposed an indefinite blockade, cutting them off from jobs, schools, families, health care, except through checkpoints. The Gaza unemployment rate was 45% in October, almost 80% by last December. This April, Congress passed a relief package of $56 billion, $9 billion earmarked for Gaza, and the remaining $47 billion for Israel, much of it for weapons, thus enabling mass killing while providing a few crumbs for the victims. The IDF is killing the Palestinians. The Jewish people aren't responsible. Hamas launched the October 7 attack, not the majority of Palestinians. The Holocaust was a tragedy of unimaginable proportions, but it wasn't folks currently living in Gaza and the West Bank who manned the gas chambers. Their crime is, and has been, attempting to hold on to lands their family have occupied for generations. Hamas does have a peace plan, but it appears Netanyahu would rather grind the entire area into oblivion. It's only common sense that our complicity is going to spawn more terrorism. Maybe the college protesters get it. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And this is Ken, and I've been reading from the Friday, May 10th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Lois E. Forkenbrock, Dyersville. Lois E. Forkenbrock, 74, of Dyersville, passed away at home surrounded by her family on Monday, May 6th. Visitation for Lois will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Sunday, May 12th, at the Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville. Private graveside services for Lois will be held Monday, May 13th, at St. Francis Cemetery in Dyersville. Lois was born September 16, 1949, in New Vienna, daughter of William Bill and Margaret Schaefer Rowling. She was a graduate of the first graduating class of Beckman High School in Dyersville. She was united in marriage to Robert Forkenbrock on October 23, 1971, in Dubuque County. She worked for many years at Ross Insurance and Bob's Complete Maintenance. Lois was a member of the Basilica St. Francis Xavier Parish. She was also a former member of the St. Francis Xavier Choir, the Catholic Daughters of the Americas, St. Rose Court, number 350, and the Red Hat Society. Lois loved spending time with her grandchildren and family, whether it was playing board games, learning new card games, reading poems, putting puzzles together, cutting out Christmas cookies, and going to family vacations. She enjoyed every moment. She loved her community and all the great friendships she made over the years. Some of Lois's happiest moments were spent with a book in her hand, visiting with her neighbors, and being surrounded by amazing groups of friends who are too numerous to count. Charles J. Mason, Marquette, Iowa. Charles J. Mason, 60, of Marquette, died Wednesday, May 8th. A rosary service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 14th, at St. Mary Catholic Church in McGregor, where visitation will follow from 4 to 7 p.m. Visitation also will take place from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, May 15th at the church, followed by internment in the church cemetery. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of McGregor is assisting the family. Richard Fole, 84, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, May 8th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Monday, May 13th at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road, where services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 14th. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery. James M. Caparos, Lincoln, Nebraska. James M. Caparos, 86, of Lincoln and formerly of Dubuque, died Friday, May 3rd. Services will take place at 2 p.m. Friday, May 31st at Mueller Funeral Chapel in Linwood Cemetery, followed by internment in the cemetery. Randy J. Ehlinger, Zwingle. Randy J. Ehlinger, 64, of Zwingle, died on Tuesday, May 7th. Private services will be held. Carson Celebration of Life Center of Maquoketa is assisting the family. Dorothy A. Klein, Platteville. Dorothy A. Klein, 92, of Platteville, died Monday, April 29th. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon today at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville, where services will follow. With these passings, we also have the joy of our new arrivals, and we have a few to share with you. The first, Monday, May 6th, Halsher Marty. Ben Halsher and Michaela Marty of Galena, a girl at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Wednesday, May 8th, Burke, Kyle and Elisa Burke of Dubuque, a girl at Mercy One. Thursday, May 9th, Latham, Alec and Kelsey Latham of Dubuque, a girl at Mercy One. Welcome, little ones. May life bring you joy, smiles, and happiness. We have one more Dubuque area piece. First-generation college student nears UWP finish line. Carla Sanchez has a busy month ahead. Aside from her own graduation from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville this weekend, her older sister is graduating from Milwaukee Area Technical College, and her younger sister is graduating from high school. Sanchez is the daughter of Mexican immigrants who never got the opportunity to finish high school, and she first considered pursuing higher education after taking the ACT and speaking with some counselors at her high school. "That's really when I sat down with my parents and opened up the possibility," she said. They were like, "Absolutely, we'll support you." Ultimately, Sanchez committed to UW-Platteville because of its tuition rate, smaller campus size, and the distance from her hometown of Racine. "I wanted to get that experience of being more independent from my family," she said, adding that her parents were proud of that choice. Sanchez is graduating Saturday with a degree in industrial technology management with an emphasis in manufacturing. She has a minor in drafting and product development and a second minor in Spanish. Sanchez knew she wanted to go into the engineering field ever since taking computer-aided design classes in high school. Upon graduating, she will work at Modine Manufacturing in Racine, where she has interned the past three summers. "Modine gave me the opportunity to choose what to do each summer. I would kind of just jump around with different engineers and first shadow them," she said. "Later on, they would slowly give me more projects to do by myself." Sanchez was involved in several different projects, including electrical work, drafting, and product development. "It was cool because I got to see what it was like to be an engineer on a daily basis and kind of the type of work I would be doing," she said. "It was nice to see myself in the future at my company." At UW-Platteville, Sanchez was very involved. She had an IT job on campus and was part of Women in STEM, a program in which upperclassmen mentor younger students. Originally joining as a mentee her sophomore year, she was a mentor to three students this past school year. She said the organization focuses not just on academic help and study sessions, but also on fostering a community. It was really just hanging out with the girls and being each other's support systems for tough days, she said. It's nice to make more friends, because in my classes, it's mostly guys. Sanchez was also part of Latino Student Union, a group that aims to support Latino students and build a community. It's a really eye-opening experience to see other cultures and how we're all in college furthering our educations. Professor Eric Rimmel, who teaches several core classes for the drafting minor, taught Sanchez multiple times. He described her as dedicated. She's a front row student, he said. People tend to sit in the front row when they're a little more interested in learning their material. After enjoying her time in college, Sanchez eyes her next chapter. I know the company, I know the people I'll be working with, and they've been very helpful to me, she said. Now we'll look at some of our news in brief. Dubuque teen faces multiple charges for shots fired incident, police say. A 15-year-old boy was arrested Tuesday in the 900 block of West 5th Street and charged with intimidation with a dangerous weapon, being a minor armed with a dangerous weapon, and possession of drug paraphernalia, according to a news release from the Dubuque Police Department. The boy's name was not released because he is a minor. The release states that Dubuque police officers responded around 11:50 p.m. Monday to the 50 block of East 26th Street for a report of shots fired. The release states a man there observed three juveniles near his vehicle and approached them. When he asked what the group was doing, the group fled, and one of the juveniles turned and fired a gun at the man, the release states. A single shell casing was located in the area, but no damage or injuries were reported. The juvenile was identified via traffic cameras and located Tuesday morning. He was placed under arrest, at which point he was in possession of drug paraphernalia, the release states. Part of Asbury Road to close for much of today because of street project. A portion of a Dubuque roadway will be closed for most of today due to a street project. Asbury Road will be closed from Seipel Road to Briarwood Drive from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., according to a press release. The release states that the closure is due to an asphalt milling and overlay project. Motorists will need to follow the posted detour or use a different route. Call Public Works Department 563-589-4250 for more information. Folk rock band to perform in Jackson County from Maquoketa. Deer Tick will appear at 8 p.m. September 8th at Codfish Hollow Barnstormers, 5013 288th Avenue in rural Maquoketa, according to an online announcement by the venue. Tickets go on sale to the general public at 10 a.m. today. More information is available at codfishhollowbarnstormers.com. Dubuque man sentenced to jail for assault at local. Charles J. Hyde, 35, recently received a sentence of 60 days in jail for assaulting three people at a local bar. Per a sentencing order from District Associate Judge Mark Hostegger, Hyde must also serve 2 years of probation. Court documents state that Dubuque Police Department officers responded at about 1:30 a.m. February 10th to Next Phase, 1700 Central Avenue, for a report of a physical disturbance. Upon arrival, police located multiple people involved with the disturbance. Witnesses said Hyde walked up to a group of people at the bar and asked if they wanted to fight. Documents state, as the group attempted to leave, Hyde continued to argue with them before assaulting three of them by punching them in the face multiple times, according to documents. Officers contacted Hyde after the incident, and Hyde advised that he had argued with the group, but that one of the individuals from that group hit him first, documents state. Authorities, one injured in Grant County rollover crash. Dylan Tennant, 19, of Woodman, was transported to Gunderson Boscobel Area Hospital for treatment of his injuries from a rollover crash in Grant County, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Tennant was driving a pickup truck hauling a trailer on Wisconsin 133 in Marion Township at 8:25 a.m. Wednesday when the receiver hitch broke, causing the trailer to fishtail. The pickup truck traveled into a ditch and rolled over. Authorities, one hurt in feed truck rollover crash in Grant County. Jared Brewer, 19, of Cassville, received minor injuries but was not transported to a hospital, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that Brewer was operating a feed truck on Texas Road in Glen Haven Township at 6:45 a.m. Saturday when the truck entered a ditch and rolled over, coming to rest on a fence. Kennedy Elementary instructor named Dubuque Community Schools Teacher of the Year. A third grade teacher at Kennedy Elementary School has been selected as Dubuque Community School District's Teacher of the Year. Jeremy Hoffman was honored Thursday night at the annual Educators Recognition Reception hosted by Dubuque Education Association. Hoffman has taught third grade at Kennedy since 2015, according to a press release. He previously taught at Table Mound Elementary School between 2001 and 2015 after serving as a district substitute teacher from 2000 to 2001. The release notes that Hoffman holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education with a specialization in science from the University of Iowa and a master's degree from Graceland University. A full story on Hoffman will appear in Saturday's Telegraph Herald and at telegraphherald.com. Other finalists for the award: Dave Corbin, Hempstead High School; Leanne Decker, Jefferson Middle School; Greg Ernzen, Dubuque Senior High School; Kayla Letch, an Irving Elementary School special ed teacher; Linda Martin, Lincoln Elementary; Mark McCarthy, Dubuque Online School; Tricia Roach, Prescott Elementary; Katie Schramm, Washington Middle School; Jessica Whelan, Sageville Elementary. Also at the event, Anderson Weber received the Friends of Education Award for the company's long-standing dedication, generosity, and commitment to the local education community through programs like its Teacher of the Month recognition, according to the release. Kennedy Principal Nick Hess received the Team Together Educators and Administrators Make It Happen Award, recognizing him as a strong communicator, great listener, and purposeful and realistic leader. Big Star Quintet slated to perform in Jackson County. From Maquoketa. A performance in Jackson County this summer will showcase the 50th anniversary of the officially and critically acclaimed second album by an influential rock group. The Big Star Quintet will perform at 8 p.m. July 15th, Codfish Hollow Barnstormers. Led by Jody Stevens, the lone surviving member of 1970s Memphis band Big Star, the quintet is touring to celebrate the anniversary of Radio City. Released in 1974, Radio City featured the music of vocalist and guitarist Alex Chilton, bassist Andy Hummel, and drummer Stevens. Chilton and Hummel both died in 2010. Oh My Soul, Way Out West, Daisy Glaze, and September Girls are among the tracks on Radio City. Accompanying Stevens on the tour will be a collection of musicians performing tracks from Radio City and other songs from the band's catalog. Joining Stevens on stage will be John Auer of the Posies, Pat Sanson, and John Sirt of Wilco, and Chris Stamey of the DBs. Tickets are $55 and will be available beginning at 10 a.m. today. Visit codfishhollowbarnstormers.com for more information. DuPaco Foundation launches program to aid nonprofits. An area foundation has launched a new program to support tri-state area nonprofits. DuPaco Foundation recently launched its new nonprofit grant program, an annual program set to distribute $250,000 in competitive grant funding to tri-state area nonprofits. The funding will go toward nonprofits whose mission or program directly furthers one of DuPaco's foundation three community pillars: affordable housing and home ownership, workforce upskilling and reskilling, and small business development. Grant totals will vary depending on project sizes and scope, a news release states. Maximum allocations of $20,000 per project. Applications are open through May 31st, and the grants will be awarded in July. More information is at dupaco.com/community/ways-we-give. We have one other tri-state piece I missed. Iowa Appeals Court orders resentencing for man convicted in Jackson County assault. Louis J. Cubbage, 53, of Wheatland, was sentenced last year to 5 years in prison in Iowa District Court of Jackson County after pleading guilty to charges of willful injury, causing bodily injury, and driving while barred. He received the sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Megan Corbin and subsequently appealed, arguing that Corbin relied on an improper sentencing factor. Court documents state that authorities were told July 19, 2022, that Sean L. Haylock of Oxford Junction had been hit on the head with a steel pipe by Cubbage in rural Maquoketa. Cubbage was living in Baldwin at the time of the incident. Haylock was found to have more than 10 fractures in his skull and a brain bleed, documents state. He was transferred to an Iowa City hospital for further treatment. Cubbage initially was charged with willful injury causing serious injury, but pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of willful injury causing bodily injury. In doing so, he admitted to striking Haylock with the intent to cause harm. At the time of sentencing, Corbin sentenced Cubbage to 5 years in prison. She imposed the prison sentence, the appeals court opinion states, because Cubbage had almost killed Haylock in the incident. Cubbage appealed on the basis that the court was presented with an insufficiency of evidence in order to draw the conclusion that the victim was nearly killed as a result of the single strike, and the appeals court agreed. Cubbage did not admit to causing Haylock serious injury, and the district court did not make any finding that facts existed to substantiate the higher charge it stated Cubbage was being sentenced for. The appeals court opinion states, Cubbage's sentence has been vacated and the case has been remanded to District Court of Jackson County for resentencing by a different judge. And now we finish up with our weekend buzz, the things to do in the tri-states this weekend. Board Teachers Comedy Tour, today, Five Flags, 7:30 p.m., doors open, 6:30 p.m. And the nationally touring teacher comedians share classroom stories that are too wild to be made up. Admission, $36 to $66 per person plus fees. Tickets and information, tinyurl.com/fiveflagsboardteachers. Pond exploration at Hurstville Interpretive Center. Saturday, Hurstville Interpretive Center in Maquoketa, 1 to 2 p.m. The free hands-on program gives participants the opportunity to scoop aquatic macron invertebrates in a net and learn how to identify them. Registration and more information, 563-652-3783. 10th Annual Wing Fest, Saturday, Cascade Riverfront Park, 101 First Avenue W, Cascade. 3 p.m., Wing Fest attendees can purchase a punch card at the gate, good for 8 punches, and after eating, vote for your favorites. Live music will play from 3 to 7 p.m. Bring a lawn chair and your appetite. Punch cards, $10 per person. More information, www.cascadechamber.org/wingfest. Morla the Medlem. Saturday, Five Flags. 7 p.m., author and former combat veteran Mariah will not only give live readings for audience members, she will also suggest ways to make contact yourself. Admission starts at $39 per person plus fees. Tickets and more information, tinyurl.com/fiveflagsmariah. Carla Bonoff, Saturday, Mineral Point Opera House, 139 High Street in Mineral Point, 8 p.m., doors open 7 p.m., singer-songwriter Carla Bonoff has written hits for Bonnie Raitt, Winona Judge, and Linda Ronstadt. Admission, $30 to $45 plus fees. Tickets and more information, tinyurl.com/MPOH Bonoff, B-O-N-O-F-F. Enchanted Forest Hike, Saturday and Sunday. Mines of Spain, 8991 Bellevue Heights, all day. Self-guided hike along the Pine Chapel Trail has perfect view of the homes built by gnomes and fairies this spring. No registration required. Information, tinyurl.com/mosenchantedforest. Boy Scouts, Mother's Day, Pancake Breakfast, Sunday, Eagle Point Park, 7:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Boy Scouts annual Order the Arrow Mother's Day pancake breakfast includes all-you-can-eat pancakes, scrambled eggs, sausage links, milk, coffee, and juice. Cost is $10. Children ages 4 and younger eat for free. The event raises funds for Order the Arrow, Tumu Lodge 74. Tickets for this event can be purchased at tinyurl.com slash WKB2F9PU. Afternoon Tea, 100 Years of Fashion, Sunday, Matthias Ham Historic Site, 2241 Lincoln, 1 to 3 p.m. Explore fashion history while enjoying a cup of tea or lemonade. Finger sandwiches and other treats will be available. Admission is $25 for adults, $15 for children, and a $5 discount for members of the Dubuque County Historical Society. Tickets, registration, and more information, rivermuseum.org/events. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This has been Ken, reading from the Friday, May 10th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Reminding you, as always, listeners, there is more to find out there on IRIS than just my wonderful voice on Fridays or those other wonderful voices throughout the week with the newspapers. Listen in. Find some other programs to tune into.